This is the last Sunday we will have in this year in November. Is that correct? So, after Thanksgiving, hopefully you had a good Thanksgiving. Charles Spurgeon said about Thanksgiving and the way we handle it. He said that too often we engrave our trials in marble and we put our blessings in sand. So we tend to only remember the hard times and oftentimes forget all the good things that God's done for us. So in this same Thanksgiving season, if you failed to thank the Lord for anything, you might want to do that and not only focus on the negative. Christmas is coming. And I don't mean just the 25th day that we celebrate. I mean Christ when I say Christmas. And we're going to look at this a little bit different this morning. One verse out of John where the context reminds us Jesus the Messiah is walking on the earth. And John the Baptist, who was a precursor to announce Jesus coming, has told some of his followers that here, there's Jesus, the Lamb of God, that take away the sin of the world. So they go to Jesus and start to inquire, and that is the background of the verse that we're going to look at in chapter 1, verse 35. But Christmas, you know, it's kind of funny, isn't it? It's a paradox in our day and time, because you get one Christmas card from someone, and it's got a big fat man in a red suit and a white beard. It says, ho, ho, ho. And then the next one is a picture of a manger scene. It says, Emmanuel, God with us. Boy, that's two extremes. So where are we? When I ask this question, what do you want? And I don't mean just as a child, because as children and adults, we're never satisfied, are we? No. If you're satisfied, why do you watch advertisements? Hello? Right, and as we'll see in just a moment how unfortunate that is. For some it is peace toward men of goodwill, for such of the world, for much of the world, it's confusion, furious rushing around in a hurry, seeking something to bring peace and satisfaction. So when I ask that question, what is it that you want? What is it that you're seeking that you think will bring peace or satisfaction in your life? And that's the thing about if we're truly satisfied, why do we care if the next thing comes out? Right? If we're satisfied with what we have, why do we even care if they make a new model? Well, because you're never satisfied. Isn't that right? We won't admit that. Well, the new one's got to be better, is it? It's all made of plastic now. Isn't that right? When's the last time you bought a radiator that was made of all metal? And you guys? If you replace one in the last how many years? Bobby, when did they start doing that? A plastic radiator. You said, what are you talking about? It would be like you buying a plastic sewing machine. Have you bought a plastic sewing machine where all the working parts in it are plastic? Hello? Is a needle plastic? No. That's what we're talking about, peace and satisfaction. Why is that? You know, the story, the book, the movie, The Christmas Carol. Surely y'all have all seen that one, right? If I say that, you know what we're talking about. Oh, my goodness, what was his name? Scrooge. My goodness, how can I forget that? Who was, a part of a London law office, and he had a dream, and his guy, his partner, McFarley, had come back and after death in his dream, and, you know, the Christmas past and Christmas present and Christmas future, and all that affected him. So when he came he decided to make a change. So the whole movie, the whole book, the whole thing is about change, supposedly for the better. And he did become a philanthropist out of it, but he was a Unitarian, so really it wasn't Christ-centered things. It has nothing to do. It was just simply the imagination change. But change was the issue. So when we're talking about what is it we're looking for, from a Christ perspective, what is it that you really need that you're trying to get in your life to give you some kind of peace or satisfaction? That's the issue. I'm not talking about what kind of gifts or anything like that, because none of those things last, right? That's why I don't put warranties on them, because they don't last. You know, it ain't no good. In John, here's what it says. These two guys are coming after Jesus. So Jesus turned around and saw them following him and says, "What are you looking for? What seek ye?" Boy, that's a serious question. What are we looking for? Why do we have the job we have? Why do we demand this that we have? What is it that we're trying to get in this life to satisfy us? And if we're truly satisfied, why are we always wanting something else? You know, if we're honest. And they said to him, "Rabbi," which is to say, be interrupted, "Master," look how they answer. Where do you live? You know, when we were in Bible college in Texas, we had an amalgam of people all over the place. And one of them got to be a good friend of mine, a Cajun boy from Louisiana. And we were always joking about our colloquialisms. They had quite a few, too. And one of those was whenever you showed up somewhere, people wanted to know who you are. And they didn't ask you who you are. They said, "Where you stay?" You know, that's what they want to know. "Where you from?" Any of y'all ever heard that? I mean, that was anywhere we went as children. That the next thing they said, "Where you stay?" And then they said, "Who's your daddy?" So that's what it was. That's exactly what they're. But here's the reason they're asking, because they want more than a surface. The reason they want to know, they call him Rabbi. They're talking about they want to get together so that they can talk about who he is and what all this is about being the Messiah. So it's not surface. "Well, we just want to know where you live." Uh-uh. No, it's like when someone has a true inquiry about Jesus, and it's more than surface, it's something when we really want to know how you're going to affect our life. That's what that's about. So when they asked that question, they said, "Where do you live?" And he asked the two men who were following him to express what was on their minds, and Jesus knows what to ask. So John wanted to make clear when he tells us this, that when Jesus the Messiah confronts those who make any kind of inquiry about him, who show any interest in who he is, he says when they begin to follow him, he demands that they articulate, "What is it do you want?" You know, some people want something from Christ, as we said a couple weeks ago. You know, when they're going through a hard time, "Oh, yeah, that's all about Jesus," and then you can't find him anymore. You know, that's just the way it is. He's the God. And we make these promises, remember what James said don't do? "God, if you'll just do this, I promise." And God comes through, and they forget about it. So that's what he means. He says, if anyone shows an inkling of an interest, he said, I want to make sure that they understand what I'm about and what they're looking for. Because you remember in John chapter 6, Jesus' followers are seeing more and hearing more from him. And the longer they follow him, the more detail he gets and what he's expecting. You see, it's not a free ride with Jesus. He expects our life. And he's starting to explain this to these people when it says the disciples. It means that everybody, not just the 12. It's anyone that was been following in the crowds when he feeds the 5,000. There was herds of people following him. So in John chapter 6, whenever he starts talking about the seriousness of, "You've got to eat my flesh and drink my blood," he's talking about some details. And they say, "Whoa, we're not interested in that." So in verse 66, it says, "And from that moment on, many of those following Jesus turned around and didn't follow anymore." See, because when we start to understand, and this is what Jesus is talking about here, he says, if you come to me, I want to know what you want out of this thing, because, you know, I don't really have time to play games. Remember the rich young ruler? What did he do? "Well, I want to do this." Jesus said, "Well, go sell everything you got and then come follow me." And say, what? Jesus knew exactly what he was looking for, and Jesus said, "That's not what I'm going to offer you." So he turned around and left, and to knowledge is that Jesus didn't go after him. So he wants to know, even from us, what do we really want? Do we want something just to feel good? When I say Christmas, I mean Christ, not just the December 25th that we celebrate, which is, you know, not exactly when Jesus was born. We know that. We don't really know exactly what day it is. We have some good ideas, but we don't really know. But that's really immaterial. We know we celebrate. Just like sometimes we can't remember every little detail, but we celebrate things right. So it's not being sacrilegious or anything. The disciples answer a way that would enable them to seek him out farther in a private and greater time when he could explain these things. Why? Because John said he's the Messiah. He's God. So is Christmas about God coming to us? What is it we want from him? What is it what do you expect? You know, what is that? And what did Jesus say? His answer was, I didn't read it then. It said what? And Jesus said what? Come and see. Come find out. Most people don't want to go to the trouble to find out. Constituting the beginning of their intimate relationship, that was the starting point. It's always a starting point. Then where do we go from there? G.K. Chesterton, he captured the wonder in how Jesus' earthly address changes ours, as only he can do it. Look what he says. A child in a foul stable where the beasts feed and foam, only where he was homeless are you and I at home. We have hands that fashion and heads that know, but our hearts we lost how long ago. In a place no chart nor ship can show, under the sky's dome, to an open house in the evening home shall men come, to an older place than Eden and a taller town than Rome, to the end of the way of the wandering star, to the things that cannot be that are, to the place where God was homeless, and all men are at home. What is he saying there? There's only one place to be satisfied. And that was a place where was the stable, where Christ became God in the flesh for our sakes. That's what he's saying. It's a question for this Christmas. What is it that we really need where we can honestly be satisfied? You know? Where you don't have to always be trying to get this or get whatever it is, whether it's money. There's so many people in church today, and I mean church in America. I'm not mean just Harmony Church, but there are people in Harmony Church who unfortunately have bought into the scheme from the world that they just got to throw God aside because they got to get this stuff now while they're young so they can retire when they're old. I mean, I know it's an epidemic. And what happens is, God is pushed aside because we have bought into what the world says. Oh, you got to have this. Really? Let me ask you something. No, that would open up a whole can of something, wouldn't it? No, I can't do that. I don't have time to explain that one. Okay, I'll do that another day. What is it that we need? What are we looking for in this life when we could actually be satisfied? Whether we're living in a cardboard box or whether you're living in a $1 million mansion. That you're really satisfied and you can honestly say, you know, if I don't ever get anything else in this world, I can honestly be satisfied. That's tough. We don't live like we're satisfied. You say, well, I am, but ask that question again. Why are we always looking for the next thing? You remember that Vince Gill song, right? The next big thing? Any of y'all ever see that country video? You need to look at that. He starts out with the hula hoop and then some of this black hairspray. These guys would paint on their bald heads to make their hair look like it was still there. Have y'all ever seen that? And then he walks through it. It's always this fad or this fad and this fad, and then it's gone. And no one cares. Why? Because we bought into the system's idea that, oh, if you just get this, you'll be satisfied. We're never satisfied. Come on. That's a downfall of us. Did you ever ask yourself, why am I here? And I don't mean just at church. That's always a good question to ask. Why? What do I really want out of this life? Those are the most penetrating questions, if we ever ask them, to get to an answer to that, where then if we settle that, we might be satisfied and not worry about what the rest of the world does. How do you spell relief? You know, not R-O-L-A-I-D-S either. I ain't talking about that. How do you spell the fact that you can be satisfied and not worry about what everyone else does or what everyone else says? How much drama would that cut out? How about it, teenagers? If you really didn't care what anybody else thought, or young adults, how much drama does that eliminate? Facebook would go out of business. I shouldn't say it that way. Not everybody's, I guess, I shouldn't say that either. I better not say anything. Right? Anything can be used for good, but boy, it's easy to use it for evil. How do you spell relief? Jerry Clower, the great philosopher, spelled it out one time years ago when they were all going coon hunting. And I'll shorten the story for you. They're going with the guy who owns all the land in the Amid River Swamp, and they're going to go with him, and his guy is with him. John Eubanks is the greatest tree climber that's ever been. And so they treed the coon, and they don't shoot them out. They would always climb the tree and knock the coon out and give him a fighting chance to whip all the dogs and walk off if he wanted to. I've actually seen that before myself. I back when I was a little bit younger, I climbed an oak tree and I was going to do that, punch the coon out. And all I had was a stick. And he was about 35 foot off the ground, and I didn't get to punch him out. I got about 4 foot from him, and he just sailed out of the tree. But we never caught him. He outrun the dogs and took off. So there is that sporting chance, for those of you who think they were evil, all right? Anyway, John's up there, and they got him treed, and he's up there, and he gets his stick out of his overalls, and he reaches around, and he punches the coon, but it wasn't no coon. Y'all know the story, right? It was a lynx, a souped-up wildcat. That's what they call them. And what happened is that thing got to fighting John, and John was just squat, shoot this thing, because he knew that he carried a pistol in his pocket to shoot snakes with. And it was just going on. He said the dogs were going crazy and everything. He said, John, what's the matter? He said, shoot this thing. And he said, John, I can't shoot up there. I might hit you. And John yelled. He said, well, just shoot up in here amongst us, because one of us got to have some relief. Right? How do you get that? You know, when someone's just been told in your family that they're not going to live very long, where you get that peace at? Where you get that from? You're standing over that gash in the earth we call a grave, and you bury somebody you love, and how do you be satisfied? You don't get that off the internet or anyone else. How do you be satisfied? What do you need in your life that where you can truly, remember what it says, it's in Philippians chapter 4, right? A peace that surpasses anyone's no one can explain what Jesus does to give us peace in those events. No one can explain that. That's what it says. The peace that passes all understanding comes from him. That's exactly what Christmas is about. We're all looking for something that will change our lives and to give it more meaning and purpose. Where are we expecting that to come from? You know, in a relationship, in a job, in a bank account? What is that? Remember, we learned a lot through James about how easy we have already succumbed to what the world tells us we need. If we're honest with ourselves, all of us have to deal with that daily. And especially during this season when everyone's trying to sell you something. And most of the time, you don't need it. All right? What is the meaning of it all? Where can we find peace in all this right now and assurance that when all of this is over, that we're going to be okay? You buy a plastic radiator, you'll probably replace it in your lifetime. Ain't that right, Bobby? Yeah. You better take a keep up with the receipt. How many times, and Bobby can attest to this, you buy a brand new fuel filter, a fuel pump that, you know, you had to take the tank out and get it out of the tank, and it doesn't even work the first day. Why? Because it's junk. So what do you need that can you something that will last? Nothing this world gives us. That's what Christmas is about. Malcolm Muttridge, he was the journalist that came to Christ at 75 years old, was a great writer, part of the Parada magazine, and he put Mother Teresa on the map, basically, is what he did for her. Used to write forcefully against communism. A great writer. And remember now, he's lived 75 years without Christ. But look what he says. He speaks about the danger of seeing education as the ultimate answer. Boy, we live in there right now. We have educated ourselves in America in the last 35 years, God out of existence, basically. If you know anything about the university system and school system, that's where we are. You might be a teacher or whatever, and boy, you see it if no one else does, right? Look what he says. Education, the great mumbo jumbo and fraud of the ages. You're talking about fake news? How about fake education? Purports to equip us to live and is prescribed as a universal remedy for everything from juvenile delinquency to premature senility. For the most part, it only serves to enlarge stupidity. Inflate conceit, enhance credulity, and those subjected to it at the mercy of brainwashers with printing presses, radio, and television at their disposal. And he's writing a long time ago. Is that where we are? What does that mean? Everyone else is telling us what we need to satisfy us. That's the problem. And Jesus says, he says, guys, what are you looking for? They call him rabbi. There were rabbis, absolutely, that would take on students individually and teach them in the time of Jesus. You know, he was not an Orthodox ordained rabbi, and a lot of them looked at him as kind of a heretic because he hadn't been to the rabbi school, you know. So it was literally that is what he's talking about. He says, we have gotten to the point where we think that education is the answer. You know, my dad only graduated the fifth grade, and I've had a lot more opportunities than he has, but there's a lot of ways he still is a whole lot smarter than I'll probably ever be. So education, just because you have education, doesn't mean you're smart. It just means you got through the system. You know, if you know how to get through the system, you can get through the system and not know anything when you get out. Or even bigger than that, not know how to use what you got out. That's what Ephesians talks about. It says what? We're praying that God would give us the wisdom to use the knowledge we have correctly. That's, okay, I'm not going to be political, but I want to. We are the frogs in the kettle. You know that how that works, right? Where, you know, they tell us, I've never boiled a frog. I've done some bad things, but never quite that bad. I've eaten frogs before, but I didn't boil them. I killed them first. If you take a frog and you put him in boiling hot water, he'll hop out or try it. But if you put him in just regular room temperature water, he'll be there. And if you just turn up the heat a little bit by a little bit, he'll boil to death. Why? Because he cannot see the heat starting to rise, and so he dies. So that's what he's talking about, Mutteridge, the same guy. He said, we're the frogs in the kettle. The frogs are us, the water is our habitat, and the media, by accustoming us to the gradual deterioration of our values and our circumstances, ensure that the boiling point comes upon us unawares. Case in point. Here lately, Meredith has discovered Perry Mason. Okay? Black and white Perry Mason. Some of you said, what's black and white? It means television before color. This happened to be like a 61 version, okay? And we started watching some of those, and every one of them, it's amazing how it displays the mentality of that time compared to the mentality of our time. Because every time, you know, he always wins. And everyone that he's saying, you're guilty, they finally come out to the end. Yes, I killed him! And they admit it. They admit it was wrong. Nowadays, no one does anything wrong. And they sure won't admit it. Oh, I didn't lose. I'm not going to concede. Hello? Wait a minute. This is exactly what happens. We get so accustomed by the world that we do not even recognize how we're living like the world. And how really we're trying to depend on the world to give us a peace and satisfaction, and it's not going to work. That's exactly what he said. He said, what are you looking for? Really? We want to talk to you, Jesus. Well, okay, come on. Come and find out. Education can have a great, obvious merit, absolutely. But elevating it to the highest place leads us to look in the wrong places for something to bring us peace and fulfillment. It just doesn't work that way. The dilemma of all mankind is we can never satisfy ourselves. Wow. If that's not true, who in here is driving the same car that you first had when you turned 16? Anyone? Well, they don't last that long. Well, they can last a long time. My truck's got 270,000 on it. So they can last a long time. Right? Anyone? Anyone? Why? Well, new model. Oh, hello. What does that mean? Well, we just not satisfied with riding without air conditioner. There, bingo. You're not satisfied. Why is it you've got to have automatic transmission? Because the shifter in town is just too much trouble. You ever had a 5-speed living in Raleigh? Whenever red light catches you and your leg goes to sleep because you're tired of mashing the clutch? Oh, I'm just not satisfied with a 5-speed or a 4-speed. Right? Well, that's ridiculous. But is it true? If we're not careful, the world tells us, not Jesus, what's going to take to satisfy us. So guess what? We're never satisfied because it always changes. The next model comes out. Meaningless, G.K. Chesterton says, does not come from being weary of pain. Meaningless comes from being weary of pleasure. You know, it's amazing. A lady was telling me after the first service, is someone she knew. And here's my take on it, just from being raised on the farm. If you work 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, you don't get in much trouble. Why? There ain't enough energy. You're getting in trouble. By the time dark comes, what do? You're ready to go to bed. That's right. I think there's an old cliche about that. What? The devil does what? Well, what kind of mind? Idle. What happens is we have become so pleasure-oriented, it drives us to, we don't find any meaning in life. Boy, he's right, and he wrote a long time ago as well. We have exhausted ourselves in this indulgent culture. Wow. It's all about having fun, right? Every day's a Friday. That's right. If you feel it's imperative to fill your needs, and if these needs are contradictory or in conflict with others or simply unfillable, then frustration is going to follow. You're never going to be satisfied. That's absolutely true, isn't it? Why is it some people are never satisfied? Because they're always looking, you know how that works. I can prove that it's true because, you know, I was raised around a lot of liquorheads. And it's amazing, the guys who start drinking beer get to the point where they could drink a whole case. That's 24 cans, by the way. Or is it 12 cans? 24 back then, it was a whole big box. And why? Because they got immune to it. One wouldn't satisfy them, so they'd drink two. Then they'd drink three. Then they'd drink a six-pack. Then they'd drink a 12-pack, or they were all in a box open then. And before you know it, they could drink 24 and still wasn't, you couldn't tell they were drinking. Why? So what does he go to next? He goes to hard liquor. That was before marijuana and all these other things, so that's the only thing they had. You're never satisfied. So you got to keep getting more and keep getting more. That's who we are. Isn't that right? Why is it one piece of chocolate pecan pie is not enough? Hello? Why? Because we're not satisfied with one piece. Have you ever had that? From Cracker Barrel? It's quite good. And it's probably cheaper than you can make it. Literally. Quite good. But why is it? What was that commercial? You can never eat just one. Why? Because they know our nature. That's it. We're never satisfied. The most dramatic truth about the gospel is that it contradicts us to the way we experience ourselves as alive and compels us to drastically redefine what does it mean to be alive. It means to be satisfied and have some peace. Whether you're living in a box or you're living in a mansion, it's irrelevant if we're truly satisfied. Bless her heart, my grandmama, she had it. She didn't come to Jesus till she was 75. But she just always thought that if you just be a good person, and you look at the context in which she was raised and around a bunch of pagans and never got to go to church, she just thought that if you just were a good person that Jesus would accept you. But once she understood that she needed to have forgiveness, then she followed that through with a commitment to Christ and was baptized. But you know what she'd always say? I'd be wanting her to do something so bad. I said, Granny, you just got to do this. She'd just start laughing. She said, I don't have to do anything but die. That's it. That is it. That is the only thing we have to do. Well, you have to pay taxes. Or they'll come take whatever you got. Ain't that right? By the way, you know that. You don't own anything. You rent it from the government. Because if you quit renting it by paying your taxes, guess what they do? They confiscate it. So you really don't own anything, and they tell you what to do with it, right? It's just about that close to communism. Anyway, I said I wasn't going to get political. I'm sorry. He contradicts our routine in the way that he countered the disciples even as he headed toward the cross. They were the ones marked out for death. He, the dead one, was the one who was the really alive one. Isn't that, boy, that's ironic. With all that cultural terrain that it presents us, the injunction to find oneself, one must lose oneself, contains a great truth any seeker of self-fulfillment needs to understand. Oh, well, I got to do this and find myself. You're never going to find yourself without Jesus. And that's what the world says. Oh, you deserve this, really? And so what happens is we just sacrifice what Christ wants to do in our life to fulfill ourselves in money or prestige or something crazy. But it doesn't last because then we got to go to the next thing. It's a reminder that the church must keep in mind, apart from the cross of Christ, there is no hope and there is no satisfaction. And there is no peace. That's the only place. So when Christmas is coming, Jesus says, what is it you really want? What would it be like to be satisfied and not care what anyone else thinks? Teenagers? All y'all in school? Oh, I don't want, who really cares what everyone else thinks? Well, and if we do, you see what I'm talking about? You say, well, that's ridiculous. No. We're basing what everybody else thinks to bring us our peace and satisfaction. No, that's, if you boil it down, that's where it is. And adults the same way. Well, I don't want to do that because they'll think I'm a lunatic. Really? Who really cares what they think? They're not going to be at the judgment. They're not going to be the one that's going to have the last say about you. Only Jesus is. That's the one that should care, right? The late Christian songwriter Rich Mullins, who knows who that was? Any of you? A couple of you? This is what he said about God's purpose for us when he observed this in his own life. He said, what I would have settled for, you've blown so far away, and what you brought me to, I thought I could never reach. If I could have just got this, man, I'd be satisfied. And he says, a place that I never thought I could have gotten to, that's where you took me. Why? In the intentions of God, we find that where we should have settled, right? He moved us far beyond that. Where we would have failed, he took our place. Satisfied. What did Mary say? He who is mighty has done great things for me. Wow. Let us not settle for less than what God has intended. You know, the world can't satisfy. God didn't mean for the world to satisfy us. If we're so focused on the world and can be satisfied by it, what did James said? What? If you love the world, the love of who is not in you? The Father. Yes. John says it as well. He says, what? A friend of the world is an enemy of God. So if that's what's satisfying us, we do have a problem. The number two thing is, do we see it? Many people think that they found their own relief. Oh, George Bernard Shaw, he said, there's only one religion. There are hundreds of versions of it. And boy, that's exactly where we are now. There's no absolute truth. Everything's okay. As long as you're sincere in what you believe, it doesn't really matter. If you believe you can push a butter bean down Houses Mill Road and get to heaven, that's okay. You know, everybody can get there however they want to get there, right? And that's exactly where we are today. In our pluralistic society, an increasing number of people find his interpretation of religion appealing, and they just say, oh, I can get my own peace. Is that right? Apart from a Christian worldview, no other religion coherently explains what our condition is. Not only do we fall short of our own intentions, but we fall short of what God wants to do in us and with us. As for God, writes the psalmist, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord proves true. For who is God but the Lord, and who is a rock except our God? It is the standard beside whom we stand in fearful contrast. When we can step no closer to that standard by our own merit or what we can do, then a foolish king can order the stars to bow down before him. To look at him is to find that even our best intentions are made of straw. Here's the question. Have you satisfied yourself? Look at this question. Do all these different provisions, if it's Hindus or, my goodness, it's just unnamed now, how many things out there, or is God? When all these provisions of peace and satisfaction that all these people are embracing, they come up and they say, oh, yeah, how long does that last? Why are they always looking for something the next month? Well, I tried this and I tried this and tried this. Why? Because none of those things last. And that's exactly what we see. Jesus said, my peace I give unto you, not like the world gives. Let your heart not be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Malcolm Muttridge, that same gentleman that I quoted, he was speaking at All Souls Church in London years and years ago, and because of his influence, it was full of atheists. They wanted to come hear what he had to say. He's, you know, comes to Christ at 75 and is a speaker. So the place is flooded. And afterwards, he asks any questions. And this little boy comes up almost like someone with cerebral palsy. You know, he's handicapped and can't hardly talk. And he starts to talk. And Muttery just told him, he said, just take your time. I'm not in a hurry. I want to hear exactly what you have to say. And so he finally got it out. He says, if you say God is a loving God and he's in control of everything, why am I like this? Why am I crippled? Why is that? So he thought for a moment and he asked him. He says, well, If you were physically fit, you could speak, have no problems whatsoever, would you have come to listen to me tonight? And the little boy was honest, and he said, probably not. And he said, well, could it be because God loved you so much that he thought in your condition you might come and you might hear the gospel before it's too late and you might be saved? Could it be that? And the little boy said, could be, could be. What does it take to satisfy us? What it, I mean, honestly, if you boil it all down, oh, if I could just have this, really? How long does that last? If that was true, and I'm not, if it was just true among Christians, my goodness, it surely isn't true in the lost world, but if it was just true among us, why would we always be after the next thing? Honestly, what is it that we need to be satisfied? Jesus said, come and see. And they did. Let's pray. Lord, how confused we've become because we live so much in the world. Please remind us through your conviction of the Holy Spirit as your children. Remind us to examine what is honestly satisfying us. And if we're not satisfied, what the problem is. Thank you that you will forgive us. You will give us a peace now. Regardless of what happens in this world, you will give us a peace to know that you will take care of us when this world has ended. Help us to seek you. In your name we ask it. Amen.